What do you mean you're trying me for murder?
Poindexter spoke to Prosecutor Gillespie in his office.
It's for your own protection.
Yeah, well, I don't see how me being tried for murder could be for my own protection.
That's because you don't understand the law. If you're tried and found innocent, no other judge can ever try you again for that same crime. It's called double jeopardy.
Oh, well, I'll be damned. That's the way it works, huh?
Yeah.
But what about Sharp now? He shot him, too. Fact is, with that double load of buckshot, why, it's more than likely that he's the actual one killed the ranger.
If you're found innocent by way of justifiable homicide, then there'll be no need to charge Sharp.
Oh, well. All right. Let's get it done.
The trial began less than 2 hours after the shooting had occurred. Because of the sensational aspect of a shooting between two lawmen, the courthouse was full, despite the short notice.
Your Honor, if it please the court, I would like to make the petition that I be temporarily excused from the position of prosecutor so that I might defend Sheriff Poindexter.
All right, but that means I'll have to appoint a new prosecutor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Very well. Deputy Sharp, please locate James Earl Van Arsdale and tell him he has been appointed as prosecutor for this case.
The gallery fidgeted as they waited for Van Arsdale to arrive so he could assume the duties of prosecuting attorney. During that time, Gillespie and his client spoke quietly at the defense table as they prepared their case. A few minutes later, Deputy Sharp returned to the courtroom with James Earl Van Arsdale in tow. Van Arsdale looked at the crowd in the courtroom, and it was obvious by the vacant look in his eyes and the expression on his face that he had no idea what was going on.
Mr. Van Arsdale, approach the bench, please.
Hesitantly, cautiously, Van Arsdale did as instructed.
Mr. Van Arsdale, raise your right hand. Do you, James Earl Van Arsdale, solemnly swear you will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon you as prosecuting attorney under the Constitution and laws of the United States and of the state of Texas, so help you God?
What? I'm to be the prosecutor?
Counselor, the only answer I will accept is yes or no.
No, Your Honor. I'm not prepared to be a prosecutor.
Let me put it this way, Mr. Van Arsdale. You will either accept this assignment or you will spend 30 days in jail for contempt of court, and I will personally see to it that you are disbarred. Now, what is your answer? Are you willing to serve as prosecuting attorney for the case at hand?
What is the case?
Sheriff Poindexter is on trial for the murder of a Texas Ranger.
Shocked by the comment, Van Arsdale looked over at Poindexter. Poindexter smirked at him.
What'll it be, Counselor? Jail and disbarment? Or you'll act as prosecutor?
I'll prosecute.
I thought you might see it my way. Now raise your hand. Do you, James Earl Van Arsdale, solemnly swear you will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon you as prosecuting attorney under the Constitution and laws of the United States and of the state of Texas, so help you God?
Yes.
Would you repeat that, please, Mr. Van Arsdale? You must say the word loudly enough that all here may bear witness.
Yes!
Very good. You will act as prosecution attorney in the case of Texas versus Sheriff Poindexter. You may make your case.
Your Honor, may I have some time to prepare for the case?
How much time do you need?
A week? A few days, at least?
I'll give you 15 minutes.
15 minutes? Your Honor, that's impossible!
Your 15 minutes has already started.
Your Honor, you are asking me to prosecute the sheriff for murder, but I know nothing about this case!
Very well, Mr. Van Arsdale. I will increase your preparation time to 1/2 hour in order that you may become acquainted with the case. You may retire to the jury deliberation room. I now ask that anyone who has information pertinent to the case that they think may help the prosecutor to meet with him in the jury deliberation room.
And, Judge, perhaps some coffee?
Doors sharp, get the prosecutor some coffee.
Harold Denham, Doc Gunter, and Eb Smalley were the only three people from the gallery who went into the deliberation room to meet with Van Arsdale.
Would someone please tell me what happened?
Corey Davidson went down to the Long Trail Saloon to arrest Poindexter. Poindexter and Deputy Sharp shot him.
Corey Davidson? Do you mean Texas Ranger Corey Davidson?
Yeah.
Well, I'm only prosecuting Sheriff Poindexter, but you say both Poindexter and Deputy Sharp shot him.
I think the idea is to try only Poindexter, and if he is found not guilty, there will be no charges against Sharp.
Well, did any of you actually see it happen?
None of us saw it, but we've heard accounts of it from those who did see it. Apparently, both Poindexter and Sharp had their guns pointed at him when Poindexter invited him to draw.
How do you know that the sheriff and Sharp already had their guns out?
That's what some have told us. They're afraid to testify, but I'd be willing to testify as to what they told me.
Oh, well, that'd be hearsay and wouldn't be admissible. Why was Davidson trying to arrest Poindexter?
Mal something or other. I don't remember the word.
Malfeasance.
Malfeasance. Yes, we can go with that.
Deputy Sharp stepped into the deliberation room.
Judge Dahl says you've been in here long enough. He's about to call court and decision.
Deputy, I need more time.
You ain't gonna get no more time.
Just a few minutes more.
Let's go.
All right. Yeah.
The jury was still sitting in the jury box when Denham and the others returned.
Your Honor, I ask for a continuance until tomorrow. I need time to study this case.
Request denied.
Van Arsdale looked over at the jury.
Why, Your Honor, there are only 12 men here. Am I to be given the right of voir dire?
Voir dire has already been completed. Make your case, Mr. Prosecutor.
Van Arsdale walked over to the prosecutor's table and stood there for a moment. He looked out toward Denham, Smalley, and Doc Gunter, all of whom had taken their seat in the gallery. Doc Gunter made a motion as if drinking, then pointed to the table, whereon sat a glass of water.
Mr. Van Arsdale, the court is waiting.
Again, Gunter, and this time Denham and Smalley as well, made the same motion. Wondering why all three were so insistent that he drink the water, Van Arsdale picked the glass up. As soon as he brought it close enough, he realized that it wasn't water. It was tequila. With shaking hands, he brought the glass to his lips.
Ooh. The case is a simple one to make, Your Honor. Corey Davidson, a well-known, highly respected, and honored Texas Ranger, attempted to place Sheriff Poindexter under arrest. Instead of acquiescing to the arrest, as any ordinary citizen should and would do, Poindexter reacted in the most hostile way one can imagine. He pulled his pistol and shot Texas Ranger Corey Davidson. Poindexter was resisting arrest, and in doing so, killed Ranger Davidson. This is a clear case of felony murder.
Gillespie responded with a 15-minute-long, impassioned defense plea. Davidson had come into the saloon looking for trouble, and when Sheriff Poindexter, in performance of his duty, attempted to place Davidson under arrest, Davidson drew his pistol and fired.
Sheriff Poindexter was surprised by this unexpected response from someone who was supposed to be an officer of the law. He saw someone drawing on him, someone who had the reputation of being as quick as thought with a gun. Now I ask you, gentlemen of the jury, what would you have done? What would anyone have done? Naturally, when you're placed in a life or death situation, you are going to do whatever you must in order to save your own life. Sheriff Poindexter did just that. He drew his pistol and, fortunately, was able to get his gun out before Davidson. As the drawing and shooting in such an event is one continuous motion, there was no opportunity for him to order Davidson to drop his gun. There was but one option open to him if he would save his life, and that was to shoot Davidson. Sheriff Poindexter is aware of the sterling record that Davidson had put up as a Texas Ranger, and in truth was surprised by Mr. Davidson's reaction. He feels bad about having killed this hero of Texas, but contends, and with justification, that he had no choice.
Witnesses, Mr. Prosecutor?
Your Honor, I call Deputy Sharp to the stand.
Very well, the court calls Deputy Sharp to the stand.
What do you want me for? I thought we was going to try the sheriff, and once you found him not guilty, there wouldn't be no charges against me.
There are no charges. You are being called as a witness.
Sharp looked over toward Gillespie, who nodded. He walked to the front of the court and took the stand.
State your full name, please.
Stanley Millard Sharp.
Now, Deputy Sharp, do you swear to tell the truth, nothing but the truth, and the whole truth, so help you God?
Yep.
Say I do.
I do.
Your witness, Counselor.
Van Arsdale stared at Sharp, holding the stare for a long moment without saying a word. It began to have an effect on Sharp, who started fidgeting in the witness chair.
What are you staring at me for?
Objection, Your Honor.
What are you objecting to, Mr. Gillespie? I haven't said anything yet.
He's badgering the witness.
How can you call that badgering?
Just get on with it, Counselor.
Very well, Your Honor. Deputy Sharp, when you shot Ranger Davidson, were you using buck and ball or double aught shot?
Hell, I was just using buck.
Deputy, don't answer that question. Your Honor, I object. The deputy isn't on trial.
Sustained.
Deputy, were you present when Ranger Davidson was killed?
Yep, I was there.
Tell the court what you saw.
I saw Sheriff Poindexter trying to arrest Davidson, only Davidson went for his gun.
Prior to that, did Ranger Davidson attempt to arrest Sheriff Poindexter?
I don't know.
Were you close enough to see and hear what was going on?
Yeah.
Did you shoot at the same time as Sheriff Poindexter, or was it a bit later?
It was about...
Objection, Your Honor.
Sustained. Counselor, you have been warned before about this kind of question.
Your Honor, I'm just trying to ascertain Deputy Sharp's participation in the incident, so the jury will be able to give some weight to his testimony.
Do not question him again about his alleged participation.
I have no further questions of this witness. Yeah.
Defense?
No questions.
Your Honor, with your indulgence, since I was not assigned this case until 45 minutes ago, indeed was even unaware of it, I have no other witnesses and request permission to poll the gallery.
Mr. Van Arsdale, the entire town was aware of this shooting incident. How is it that you were not?
Your Honor, I am a drunk. Sometimes I am barely aware that the sun is out.
Very well. You may poll the gallery for witnesses.
Van Arsdale picked up the glass to take another drink, but hesitated just as it reached his mouth and put it back down without so much as tasting it. He faced the gallery.
I ask anyone who saw this shooting take place to please volunteer now to be a witness.
Deputies Russell and Peters stood. Van Arsdale saw Denham, Smalley, Travers, and Doc Gunter shaking their heads no, and he understood that these witnesses would not be helpful to his case.
Yeah.
Then Eb Smalley stood.
Did you see the shooting, Mr. Smalley?
No, sir, but I can testify as to why Ranger Davidson was in Sorrento.
Your Honor, prosecution calls Eb Smalley as a witness.
Smalley came to the front and was sworn in.
Mr. Smalley, I believe you stated you could testify as to why Ranger Davidson was in Sorrento?
Yeah.
Well, please tell us.
Objection, Your Honor. The reason Davidson was here has no relevancy to this case.
Your Honor, Ranger Davidson did not spontaneously appear in the Long Trail Saloon this morning. He was here for a purpose, and I believe Mr. Smalley can shed light on that.
Objection overruled. You may examine the witness.
Mr. Smalley, did you know Ranger Davidson?
I knew him very well. I was a company commander in his regiment during the war.
What kind of man was he?
He was one of the finest men I ever knew. He was a Texas Ranger before the war. He was a very well-respected regimental commander during the war, and he rejoined the Texas Rangers again as soon as they were reconstituted after the war.
I believe you said you could shed some light onto why he was in Sorrento today.
He was here because I asked him to come.
And why did you ask him to come?
I believe Sheriff Poindexter is guilty of malfeasance of duty.
Objection, Your Honor. Sheriff Poindexter is being tried for murder, not for malfeasance.
Sustained?
Your Honor, this goes to the heart of why Ranger Davidson was here. It also provides a possible reason for the confrontation between Ranger Davidson and Sheriff Poindexter.
The objection is sustained, Mr. Van Arsdale.
Exception.
Exception noted. Please continue.
Continue where? You're gutting my case.
Careful, Counselor. You are bordering on contempt.
My apologies, Your Honor. Mr. Smalley, do you think Ranger Davidson went down to the Long Trail with the intention of killing Sheriff Poindexter?
No, I do not. I think he went down there to arrest him.
Objection, Your Honor. Hearsay.
Sustained.
No further questions.
Cross, Mr. Gillespie.
Not needed, Your Honor. This witness did not harm my client.
Call your next witness, Mr. Van Arsdale.
Why?
Careful, Mr. Van Arsdale.
I have no further witnesses, Your Honor. Prosecution rests its case.
Gillespie recalled Deputy Sharp, who testified that Sheriff Poindexter had attempted to arrest Davidson for threatening a law officer.
Davidson, he just got real mad and drew his gun on the sheriff. Sheriff Poindexter had no choice but to draw his own self, and what he done was he beat Davidson to the draw.
Thank you. Your witness, Counselor.
Deputy Sharp, why are you the only witness?
I don't know.
Wasn't anyone else there? Other customers, the bartender, any of the women?
I think they was all so scared that they didn't see nothing.
Or is it that they all saw something but are too scared to testify?
Objection. Argumentative.
Withdrawn.
Van Arsdale returned to his seat.
Closing, Mr. Van Arsdale?
Van Arsdale didn't even stand.
I believe that Ranger Davidson attempted to arrest the sheriff, and the sheriff killed the ranger while resisting arrest. The fact that Poindexter was resisting arrest renders the claim of self-defense invalid. Poindexter killed Davidson while he was resisting arrest. That constitutes felony murder, and I ask the jury to return that verdict.
Taking a cue from Van Arsdale, Gillespie didn't stand either.
There was only one witness to the shooting, and his testimony makes it clear that this was a justifiable homicide.
It took the jury 5 minutes to render a not guilty verdict.
Drinks are on me at the Long Trail.
The sheriff and his followers rushed from the courthouse to the saloon. James Earl Van Arsdale remained at the prosecutor's table long after everyone else had vacated the courthouse. And he was still there half an hour later when Harold Denham went back into the courthouse.
I thought you might be here.
Denham noticed that the glass of tequila was still full.
I was a joke. Poindexter just got away with murder because of me.
Oh, it wasn't because of you, James Earl. This whole thing was fixed from the beginning.
Yeah, including getting a drunk to prosecute.
Now, don't be so hard on yourself. The finest prosecutor in the state couldn't have overcome a stacked jury and a crooked judge.
Well, this incident has done one thing for me. It has provided an epiphany. From this day forward, I will never drink again.
When Falcon finally returned to McAllister, he went to the post office to check his mail.
Well, hello, Falcon. It's good to see you in town for a change. You're gone so often.
Oh, Will. What have you got for me?
Yeah, you got a letter from some newspaper in Texas, or so the printed copy on the envelope says.
You reading my mail, are you, Will?
I'm not reading your mail, just the envelopes. I have to. That's my job.
I was just teasing.
Dear Falcon, I do hope you remember me. I am Harold Denham, and I was editor and publisher of the Higbee Journal, when the town of Higbee was still in existence. I learned then that you were a man of honor, courage, and integrity. Such a man is badly needed in Sorrento. I have been publishing a newspaper, the Sorrento Advocate, since I arrived here. When I arrived, the town was vibrant, with fair-minded and industrious people, anxious to help the community grow. But in the last 3 years, things have changed drastically. We have a judge and sheriff who have taken over the town. Anyone who attempts to run against them is discouraged to the point of physical danger. Extremely heavy local taxes have been assessed, and our local judge, Judge Theodore Dawes, is known as Hang'em High Dawes, not without good reason. There have been, to date, 6 hangings this year. It may well be that 1 or 2 of the victims deserve to be hanged, though the justification of all the hangings has been questionable, and no doubt the sentence, if not the verdict, would have been overturned on appeal. But no appeal is allowed. The judge, with a hand-picked jury, tries the defendants, often in less than an hour. The jury finds the defendant guilty, and the judge sentences the defendant to hang, the entire process taking less than 1 24-hour period. Sheriff Dewey Poindexter is Judge Dawes's right-hand man and enforcer. Those who are in the judge's or the sheriff's favor are exempt from normal behavior. The town is terrorized, and neither merchant nor citizen can expect any support from the legal system. Vandalism, assaults on our citizens, public drunkenness, obscene behavior, all such activity as would normally be dampened by an honest and aggressive legal system, are allowed to flourish here. A recent incident will illustrate the sad state of affairs in our town. A concerned local citizen wrote to a friend of his, who was a Texas Ranger. He invited the Ranger, a genuine Texas hero by the name of Corey Davidson, to come to Sorrento to investigate malfeasance on the part of our sheriff. Sheriff Poindexter shot and killed Ranger Davidson. Judge Dawes then held a trial, charging Poindexter with murder. Though it was reported to me by witnesses that it was indeed cold-blooded murder, those witnesses were too frightened to testify, and the result was exactly as Judge Dawes, Prosecutor Gillespie, and Sheriff Poindexter expected. The sheriff was found not guilty, thus immunizing him against any further charge of murder. I have no way of persuading you to come, other than to appeal to your sense of honor, justice, and fair play. Should you decide to help us, you may find me at the Sorrento Advocate, 311 Front Street, Sorrento, Texas. With respect, I remain your obedient servant, Harold Denham.
Letter in hand, Falcon walked down to the sheriff's office, where he found Sheriff Cody looking through reward posters.
I haven't found the Drew poster yet, but I know I've seen paper on him.
Well, thank you, Amos, but I'm not here to check on that. I want you to see what you can find out about a Judge Theodore Dawes and Sheriff Dewey Poindexter.
I don't think I've ever heard of either one of them.
I wouldn't really expect you to. They're both down in Texas. Sorrento, Texas.
All right. I've got some sheriff friends down in Texas. I suppose I could send a few telegrams and see what turns up.
It was nearly noon, so Falcon walked back down to the City Pig. He had lunch and was just finishing up when Sheriff Cody came in, clutching 3 pieces of paper in his hand. He walked over and sat across the table from Falcon.
I've heard from 3 different people, and they all say the same thing. Not one of them has anything good to say about either Dawes or Poindexter. Why did you ask about them? What have you heard about them?
I hadn't heard of them at all, until I got a letter from a friend of mine, a newspaper editor who lives in Sorrento. He's asked me for help.
Help in doing what?
I'm not sure, but he's a friend and he asked for help. That's all I need.
All I can say is, he's a lucky man to have a friend like you. But then all of us who know you are lucky to have such a friend.
With syrup like that, Amos, you don't ever have to put anything on your flapjacks, do you?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to embarrass you.
Just hold down the praise just a bit, will you?
What if I call you a bandy-legged, 2-bit hustling sidewinder who doesn't have sense enough to get in out of the rain and couldn't throw a ringer in horseshoes if his life depended on it?
Ouch! Now that really does hurt. The part about the horseshoes, I mean.
Money had neither been offered nor implied in the letter. It was a simple plea for help. And it was that, the earnest plea from an honest man, that had made Falcon decide to respond to the request. He arrived in Fort Worth by train late in the day, offloaded Lightning, put him up in a stable for the night, and then went into the White Elephant Saloon on Rusk Street. He ate a quick meal and then sat in on a card game.
You going to spend any time in town, Mr. McAllister?
The speaker was a card player by the name of Doc Burks.
I'm just passing through. I'm heading on down to Sorrento.
The other players looked at each other for a quick beat.
Oh, you live in Sorrento, do you?
I've never been to Sorrento, but I have a friend who does live there. Well, more of an old acquaintance than a friend. His name is Harold Denham. He owns a newspaper there.
He sure does. And he's a rip snorter, too. It's a wonder Judge Dawes hasn't closed his newspaper down when you read some of the stories Denham's printed about him.
Well, how could he do that?
How could he do it? It's very simple. All he has to do is order Sheriff Poindexter to do it, and it's done. Sheriff Poindexter is Judge Dawes' man. He doesn't do anything unless Judge Dawes tells him to, and he'll do anything the judge tells him to do.
Whatever happened to freedom of the press?
Freedom of the press? Well, that's a good question, and I have to hand it to Denham. He is doing everything he can to keep a free press. I have to confess that he has more gumption than I do. I don't know, but I wouldn't just leave.
Now, what kind of rule can prevent freedom of the press or freedom of speech?
A rule that says such conduct promotes disorder and advocates the violent overthrow of a legally constituted government.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Yes, indeed it is, but that's also Sorrento. However, I am proud to say that Harold Denham is fighting to maintain those freedoms which every American holds so dear to their heart.
A new man stepped into the saloon then, and he just stood to one side of the batwing doors, backed up against the wall as he studied the saloon. He was taller than average, with shoulder-length black hair and deep-set dark eyes. His skin was naturally dark and deeply tanned, so that he lacked only the high cheekbones to pass as an Indian. After perusing the room for a moment, he stepped up to the bar where, without asking, he was given a beer.
There's Marshal Courtright.
Courtright? Jim Courtright?
Oh, you've heard of him?
Yeah, I heard of him.
Falcon stood up and turned toward the tall man at the bar.
Courtright! You low-life, mangy cur! Turn around and face me like a man!
Courtright turned toward Falcon with an angry expression on his face.
So, McAllister, you didn't learn your lesson the last time we met? I have to teach you again.
You couldn't teach a thirsty dog to drink.
The men moved quickly toward each other, shook hands, and grasped each other by the shoulder.
Falcon, you mangy old mountain lion, how are you?
Doing well, Jim. Oh, last time I saw you, you and your wife were doing trick shooting with a Wild West show. How is Betty, anyway?
Just as bossy as ever. You're looking good.
How about joining me at the table with my new friends?
Burts hustled to bring another chair to the table, and Courtright sat down to join him.
Now, this ain't fair. These gentlemen always let me win when I play, but with you in the game, I don't know.
Jim Courtright, you haven't won a hand of poker since Reconstruction. But I give you credit for continuing to try.
A new hand was dealt.
Mr. McAllister is going to Sorrento.
Why in heaven's name would you want to go there?
A friend has written me for some help.
Denham.
Denham? Oh, yeah, the newspaper editor. Has he wound up in jail?
Not yet, though from what these gentlemen have been telling me, he may be there now, for all I know.
Falcon, I advise you to be very careful around Poindexter and Dawes. They have more power than any other judge and sheriff I know of in the entire state of Texas.
How did they get so much power?
That, my friend, I can't tell you because I don't know.
Jim, maybe you could do something to help him.
What, you mean go to Sorrento with him? I don't think the city fathers of Fort Worth would care much for that, do you?
I wasn't talking about that.
I was talking about Senator Maxey. Well, you know him very well. Maybe he could get Mr. McAllister appointed Deputy U.S. Marshal.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I'm sure it would only be a temporary appointment, but it would give you the authority you might need to deal with a sitting judge and sheriff.
How long would it take you to do this?
I'm not sure. A few days? A few weeks? Would you be interested?
Yeah, I think I would be. But I don't want to wait around here for it. From the tone of Denham's letter, I need to be getting on to Sorrento as soon as I can.
All right, you go ahead. As soon as the appointment comes through, I'll send it to you by telegraph.
You had better work out some code to use in the telegram. From what I understand, you don't quite know who you can and can't trust in Sorrento. If you send McAllister a telegram saying he's been appointed a deputy U.S. Marshal and the telegrapher is in the camp of Dawes and Poindexter, McAllister might not even get it. And if he does get it, chances are Dawes and Poindexter would get it first.
You may be right. All right, as soon as the appointment is confirmed, I'll send a telegram that says the horse you want to buy is for sale, and that'll be your signal.
Around the small herd of cattle rode three cowboys, all of them riders for the Big Star Ranch, located 7 miles south of Sorrento. Known as Nighthawks, their job was to keep watch over the herd during the night.
You know what? I think Lucy's in love with old Arnie here.
Arnie was 17 and the youngest of the three.
Ha! Lucy's a whore! She's in love with anyone that has a dollar and a half.
No, Cal, I'm serious. I think Lucy is in love with Arnie. What have you done, Arnie? I've been trying to make her fall in love with me for the longest time, but here you come. You ain't been here more than 6 months and she's in love with you. You must have shown her a real good time.
Stop your teasing, Parker. You know I ain't never been with Lucy. Fact is, I ain't never been with no woman at all.
You ain't never had a woman? Why, boy, you ain't gonna be a man till you have yourself a woman. How come you ain't never been with Lucy? I mean, her loving you so much and all.
Well, she don't love me. You know what I think? I think she loves him just 'cause he's a virgin. Whores like to break in young virgins.
Oh, that's it, Arnie. Next time we go into town, you gonna get broke in, and Lucy's gonna be the one to do it.
Sounds like one of them's wandered off. I'll go find it.
Did Lucy really say that about Arnie?
Sort of.
Sort of? What sort of?
She asked if I thought he was a virgin.
Well, that's a long way from saying she was in love with him.
You just gotta understand how whores talk is all. Oh, what the hell's that fool boy shooting at?
Arnie's horse appeared out of the darkness. An empty saddle on its back.
Son of a bitch, what's happening here?
Both men drew their guns, then rode out into the darkness in the direction they had last seen Arnie.
Arnie! Arnie, where are you? Arnie, answer us, boy! Arnie!
Parker! Parker, what's going on?
The herd! Somebody's stealing the herd!
None of the cows and us! Let's get out of here! Turn out! Rustlers!
Parker and Cal galloped into the compound where the big house, bunkhouse, cook shack, and barn were located. Cal dismounted and ran into the bunkhouse to pass the news while Parker knocked on the back door of the big house. An hour later, the cowboys returned, bearing the body of young Arnie Parkins. They tracked the cows to the river, but Rope's End Ranch was on the other side of the river, which made it impossible to separate the tracks of the cows they had been trailing with the cattle that were indigenous to Rope's End. Cal and Parker, finding Arnie's newest and cleanest clothes, got them ready. Then, putting the boy's body in the back of a buckboard, they drove him into town to Nunnally's funeral home. David Bowman rode into town with him. After making arrangements for Arnie to be buried, he went to the sheriff's office.
Well, Bowman, how many cows did you lose?
About 250.
About 250? Now, you can't give me a closer count than that.
247 was the last count. But we've moved some in and some out, so about 250 is the best I can do.
All right, that's good enough. I'll see what I can find out about what happened to them. But once cows get stole, the rustlers pert near always get the beeves out of the county as quick as they can. And when they do that, I don't have any more authority over them.
Yeah, well, do what you can.
When Bowman left, Poindexter got out a piece of paper and began doing a little figuring. He had set this cattle rustling operation up, and he was due to get $4 a head. Now, if Pogue and the others stole 248 cows from the Big Star, Poindexter began figuring the numbers, and when he finished, he leaned back in his chair and smiled. He would have $992 coming from this operation. 2 young men passing through town stepped into the Hog Heaven Saloon and walked up to the bar. There was a man standing down at the far end of the bar, nursing a drink and wearing a badge. As the boys stepped up to the bar, the man with the badge looked over at him with an unblinking stare. At least it was half an unblinking stare, because one of his eyes had no eyelid.
Well, it be, gents.
One of the 2 young men continued to stare back at the man who was standing at the end of the bar. He had never seen anyone who had an eye without an eyelid before, and he found the lidless, oversized eyeball to be disquieting.
Hooter, the bartender asked what do we have.
Oh, sorry, Luke. 2 beers.
2 beers it is.
And I'll have the same.
You boys sound like you got a thirst.
Just saying we're thirsty don't quite get it. Why, I got that much dust you could grow cotton in my mouth.
Cotton, huh? You boys must be farmers.
We've done some farming. You got something against farming?
No, Lord, no. I'm an old farmer myself, or at least my pa was. And I grew up on a farm back in Mississippi. I picked many a pound of cotton, chopped it too. What brings you boys to Sorrento?
Truth to tell, there don't nothing in particular bring us to Sorrento. We just got a little bit of the wandering fever, so we're going first to one place, then to the other. Sort of seeing the country we are.
So far, though, the only country we've seen is Texas.
Well, Texas is a big state, and you couldn't go wrong just taking it in.
How are you two paying for wandering around?
The question came from the man with the badge.
Now, I don't know that that's any of your business. But I'll tell you, because maybe you can help us out.
Oh, how am I supposed to help you?
Well, sir, we're pretty good cowhands. And being as you're wearing a badge, I reckon you got a pretty good handle on things around here. Do you know if any ranchers are hiring?
Cowhands, huh?
Why are you laughing?
Oh, because I'd be willing to bet that you ain't never punched one cow. You might be farmers, but you ain't cowboys. More than likely, what you are is thieves coming to see what you can steal.
Who are you calling thieves?
I'm calling you boys thieves.
Who are you?
Maybe you didn't notice my badge.
Yeah, I seen your badge.
Sheriff, why don't you ease up on these boys? They haven't broken any laws.
You stay out of this, Beeson.
You got no right to go around accusing people of stealing with no cause.
Oh, now I got every right. I'm the sheriff here. Name's Poindexter. Now, what about them horses you rode in on? You got something to prove you own those horses?
My daddy gave me my horse. I raised him from a colt.
So what you're saying is, you ain't got nothing to prove you own them horses, do you?
I don't need nothing. I told you, I raised him from a colt.
Well, what about you?
Mister, I don't need to prove nothing to you.
I told you, it ain't mister. It's sheriff. And yeah, you do need to prove it to me. Because if you don't, I'm gonna have to put you 2 boys in jail and start sending out telegrams to see if there's 2 horses that's been stole somewhere.
Now wait just a minute here. That ain't no way right. Hell, there's always going to be some horses that were stole somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. And every time I find a couple of missing horses, well, I'm gonna have to make sure it ain't the 2 you boys rode in on.
Sheriff, why are you rousting these 2 men like this? These 2 boys haven't done a thing since they came here. But buy a drink and ask if you knew where they could get on as ranch hands.
I said stay out of this, Beeson. Unless you want to wind up in jail with them.
Jail? What do you mean, jail? You ain't putting us in jail, no way, no how. Leastwise, not without no reason you ain't.
I'm the sheriff, and if I say you're going to jail, that's all the reason I need. Now, of course, if you two boys would be willing to pay the search and clearance tax, well, then you wouldn't have to go to jail.
Search and clearance tax? I never heard of nothing like that. What is it?
It's pretty simple. If I'm going to start sending out telegrams about you two boys, you don't expect the town or the county to pay for it now, do you? Well, that wouldn't be right, would it? I figure $10 apiece ought to just about cover it. You boys just come up with $10 apiece, and you could ride on out of here.
Hell, I ain't got nothing but $12, and I'll be damned if I'm going to give $10 to you.
And I ain't got but $9.
Well, then that ain't no problem, is it? You just borrow a dollar from your friend here. You can both pay the tax, and you can be done with it.
What if we don't pay you nothing?
Well, then, like I said, you'll have to go to jail.
The hell I will. If you're planning on putting me in jail, then you better bring along some help, you bug-eyed bastard.
Easy, Hooter. We come up here to get work, not to get into no fight.
Well, I sure as hell ain't going to let this pop-eyed son of a bitch throw us in jail for no reason at all.
All right, that's it. You boys shuck out of them gun belt. You're going to jail, both of you.
The hell I am. And I ain't taking off my gun belt neither. You want it, you're going to have to take it off of me.
Oh, I can do that, farm boy. Trust me, I can do that.
Listen to me, you don't want to mess with the sheriff.
Whoever he is, there's only one of him and two of us. I reckon we can handle the likes of him.
Hooter, I don't like the way this is playing out. Come on, let's just go. We'll find us another town, one that's a mite more friendly than this one has been.
All right, I'll let it go this time. Maybe folks here just don't know how to be friendly.
Maybe you boys didn't hear me. I said you two are going to jail until I find out whether or not them horses you two are riding is stoled.
And I told you them horses ain't stolen and we ain't going to jail.
Hooter hung his hand down near his pistol.
You planning on drawing on me, are you, farm boy?
If it comes to that.
Well, there's two of you. You think that's fair?
Fair ain't got nothing to do with it. You're the one who started this here fracas. All we done was come in here for a beer. If we ain't welcome here, we'll just leave, and that'll be the end of it.
You think so, huh?
Please, Hooter, let's just go now.
My friend is right. There's no need to carry things any further. Let's just drop it here, and me and him will walk out of here. This isn't worth either one of us dying over.
Oh, it won't be either of us, farmer. It'll just be you. Both of you. You came in here together, and you're gonna die together.
No, it ain't gonna be either one of us, because there ain't neither one of us gonna draw on you. So if you shoot us, it's gonna have to be in cold blood in front of these witnesses.
Oh, you'll draw all right. You'll draw first, too. And these witnesses will say that.
They ain't gonna be able to say it, because we ain't gonna draw on you. I want you all to hear this. We ain't gonna draw on the sheriff.
I think you will.
Please, sheriff, we don't want any trouble. I told you. We'll be going now.
The only place you're going is to jail until I check on them horses.
Luke and Hooter looked at each other. Then, with an imperceptible signal, they started their draw. So bad were they that Sheriff Poindexter had the luxury of waiting for just a moment to see which of the two offered him the most competition. He decided it was Hooter.
Damn! 248 cows and a couple of horses. Not a bad day.
Several days after the brick incident, Denham visited the sheriff again to find out if there were any clues as to who had vandalized his office.
I haven't looked into it that much.
So what you're telling me, Sheriff, is that you have no intention of trying to find out who did it?
Denham, this town has over 500 people. You expect me to question every damn one of them just to find out who broke your window?
I expect you already know who broke it.
What's that supposed to mean?
Why, Sheriff, I just mean that you have your fingers on the pulse of this town. And there are few people who can put anything over on you.
Oh. Well, you just remember that. If someone breaks the law in my town, now they're going to pay for it.
Yes, like the two young men you killed yesterday.
Exactly like the two men I killed yesterday.
Whose names we don't even know.
Well, that doesn't matter now, does it? They had to be outlaws. They wouldn't cooperate with me.
Denham knew that he was not the only one who wasn't comfortable with the way the judge, the sheriff, and his deputies were running things. There was a mayor and a city council, but they were so intimidated by Poindexter that they were afraid to do anything to go against him. The average citizen had told Denham that they felt depressed, and they asked him, generally quietly, to please continue to report the truth in his newspaper. Although he had once had as many as 3 people working for him, they had been so intimidated by the sheriff and his deputies that all 3 of them had quit. Denham was now operating the newspaper alone, which meant he gathered the news, set the stories, sold the advertisements, sold subscriptions, and delivered the paper. Having heard the story of the shooting in the Hog Heaven, Denham interviewed a few people, promising them anonymity, then wrote the story that would appear in today's newspaper. He knew it would not be a story that Poindexter approved, but he didn't care. Even though the type was backward, Denham had been in the business for so long that he could read copy backwards as easily as he could forward. He made a quick perusal of the story he had just composed.
2 men hurled into eternity. Yesterday afternoon, a terrible shooting affair occurred at the Hog Heaven Saloon. 2 young men, their names as yet unknown, except as they had referred to each other as Luke and Hooter, arrived in Sorrento, ostensibly to look for employment as cowboys. An altercation developed between the 2 cowboys when they expressed resentment over an unfounded accusation made by Sheriff Poindexter that they were horse thieves. Despite the young men's believable claims that they were the rightful owners of the horses, Poindexter, without any cause for doubt, continued with his baseless accusations. It has been reported by eyewitnesses that the 2 cowboys attempted to walk away before the incident became even more confrontational, but Sheriff Poindexter would not allow it. Tempers grew hotter, angry words were exchanged, and the 2 cowboys went for their guns. Although the witnesses are all in agreement that the cowboys drew first, all except Deputy Sharp insist that the cowboys were goaded into drawing by the sheriff, who had no valid reason for their initial harassment. These are not the first unsuspecting, if not innocent, men to fall before the 2 ready guns of the sheriff and his deputies. And those who are not killed by gunfire often wind up at the end of a rope as a result of Judge Dawes' perverted sense of justice. It is the opinion of this newspaper that the citizens of our beleaguered town are being held hostage to Judge Dawes and Sheriff Poindexter, who with their minions have turned Sorrento into their own private fiefdom. The 2 young men were buried last evening on the same day they were shot, put in rough-hewn pine boxes, and laid side by side in a single, unmarked grave. This newspaper will attempt to learn their true identity so that somewhere anxious parents and family can learn the fate of their loved ones.
Less than an hour earlier, the sky had been clear and blue. Now dark rolling clouds darkened the day and sent jagged bolts of lightning streaking to the ground. Falcon got his slicker out and had just managed to put it on when the rain started. Falcon could handle the rain, but he did not like the idea of being in the open while lightning was flashing all around him. Although he could give no scientific explanation as to why, he knew that lightning tended to be drawn toward the highest point, and as a rider on horseback on a mostly treeless plain, Falcon was the highest point. Then fortune smiled on him and he saw a cabin ahead. It didn't look occupied. There were no outbuildings around it, neither barn nor lean-to for stock. There wasn't even an outhouse. Falcon figured it was probably an abandoned line shack. Whatever it was, it would provide temporary shelter from the rain, and more important, from the lightning. A bullet from the cabin struck the saddle horn. Falcon's horse reared up on his back legs, dumping Falcon to the ground.
Get out of here! Yeah!
With the horse out of harm's way, Falcon pulled his pistol and looked toward the cabin. Realizing that he was exposed, Falcon started running toward a nearby rise. Falcon spun around, then fell to the ground. Because he had seen no horses, he thought the cabin was unoccupied. Evidently, the horses had been around back. Falcon was lying on his back with his hands wrapped around his pistol. His hat was over his hands, covering his pistol, and he lay quietly and unmoving as his two assailants approached. They stopped over him, then looked down.
What you think, Coop?
He ain't dead, Travis.
He ain't dead, but he looks bad hurt. You bad hurt, mister?
I think I broke my back. I need help.
Coop was the larger of the two. His most prominent feature was a mouth full of crooked and yellow teeth.
He needs help. We shoot him and he says he needs help. Like maybe we come out here to help him or something.
Why'd you shoot at me? Cause you come riding up here all fat and sassy. You a bounty hunter, are you? After the reward money?
I don't know anything about reward money. All I was doing was looking for a place to get out of the rain.
Yeah, well, whatever reason it was you had to come here, you come to the wrong place. You see, here's the thing, mister. We ain't the kind of people who are wanting to share our house with anyone.
Oh, really? That doesn't seem all that friendly. Well, we ain't exactly what you'd call the friendly type. Well, that's good to know. I guess maybe I better make sure I don't invite you to my next birthday party. You hear that, Travis? He ain't gonna invite us to his birthday party. You're a funny man, mister. You know that? Yeah, I almost hate to have to kill you.
Well, you know what I think? I think it doesn't bother you at all. I think that you're looking forward to it. You got that right, mister.
Travis aimed his pistol at Falcon. But Falcon was ready. Falcon hurried toward the cabin, which he was now sure was a lion shack. Behind the shack, there was a lean-to, and he was happy to see that his horse had found the shelter along with the outlaw's horses.
Good boy, Lightning.
He took Lightning's saddle off, but left the bridle so he could secure him to the hitching rail. There were no other horses in the lean-to, so Falcon was reasonably certain the line shack was empty. He headed inside to wait out the storm. It was 10 miles into town, and the sun had been down over an hour by the time Falcon approached the little municipality. He led the outlaw's horses with a dead body slung over each horse. It was dark, and everyone was in off the streets. He saw the Sorrento Advocate newspaper office as he passed it by, noticing the window was broken. Then he rode on until he reached the sheriff's office. There was a man wearing a badge sitting at the desk. Well, technically he was sitting. But in reality, his chair was leaning back against the wall, his feet were up on the desk, his arms were folded across his chest, and his hat was pulled down over his eyes.
Sheriff!
Sorry about waking you up, Sheriff.
You didn't wake me up. I wasn't asleep. And I ain't the sheriff. My name's Sharp. I'm a deputy. What do you want?
I got two bodies outside.
Bodies? Who are they?
I only heard the first names. One was Travis and the other was Coop.
Coop? Might be Coop Winters. Where did you find the bodies?
Oh, it wasn't hard. They were laying right where they were when I shot them.
You shot them? Both of them?
Yeah.
You a bounty hunter?
Nope.
Then what did you shoot them for?
Because they were trying to shoot me.
Well, I'm going to have to get the sheriff in on this. He's the only one who can authorize the bounty money to be paid. How about you come back tomorrow?
Oh, all right. I'll see you in the morning.
The lobby of the town's only hotel was dimly lit by a couple of lanterns, one of which was on a small table next to a settee and the other at the front desk. The desk clerk was reading the newspaper, holding it under the lantern so he could see.
Would that be the Sorrento Advocate?
Oh, yes, sir.
You know our paper, do you?
Not exactly, but I know Harold Denham.
Oh, he's a Jim Dandy, he is. You gotta hand it to Mr. Denham. He sure don't pull no punches when it comes to writing up stories. You needin' a room?
Uh-huh, I am.
Well, you come to the right place. Fact is, you come to the only place, seeing as we're the only hotel in town.
Where can I put my horse?
No problem, we got us a livery out back. We keep fresh water and hay there all the time, no extra charge.
Oh, good.
Falcon signed the guest register.
What brings you to Sorrento?
My horse.
Your horse? Oh, I get it, mister. It ain't none of my business. Your horse. That's a good one.
After paying 50 cents, Falcon took care of his horse, then went upstairs to his room. The next morning, Falcon walked over to the room's window to look out over the street of the town he had thus far seen only at night. Down the street, a short distance, he saw a saloon, advertising itself by a huge wooden sign that read Hog Heaven. Next to the words were painted the caricature of a pig holding a golden mug of beer, and superimposed over the beer was a large 5 cents. Next door to the saloon was a dry goods store. Next to the store was the newspaper, and at the far end of the street was a church. He also noticed, standing in the middle of the street at the opposite end of town from the church, a gallows. Not just any gallows. This gallows was painted red, and there was a hangman's noose dangling from the gibbet. He didn't think he had ever seen a red-painted gallows before. He wanted to go see his friend Harold Denham, but he decided he would have his breakfast first. Having passed on his supper last night, instead going straight to bed, he was very hungry this morning. Getting dressed, he went downstairs and found the Hungry Biscuit restaurant on the same side of the street, right next door to the hotel. Half an hour later, Falcon was pleasantly full, and he pushed away from the table with a feeling of contentment.
Hey, mister, are you the one who brought them two dead bodies in last night?
The man who had called out to Falcon was wearing a badge. He also had an eye that was so strange-looking that it took Falcon a moment to realize that it was missing an eyelid. That fit Jim Courtwright's description of Poindexter.
I am. You must be Sheriff Poindexter.
Yeah, I am. How'd you know?
I've heard of you.
Have you now? Well, I want you to come on over to my office. I got a few questions for you.
I imagine you would.